everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go.
Well, happy Thanksgiving weekend, y'all. So good to see you guys. Hopefully everyone got their fill. And can you believe it's the final month of 2024? Wow, this year went by that, and next thing you know, 2025 will be here. But hey, what's been so cool these last several weeks, we've been in this series called Ripple Effect, where Jesus gives us tons of opportunities every day to make an outsized impact locally and globally. And now, if you have not seen any or missed any of those messages, I highly recommend go to our website or app and check those out. The last several weeks, they've been incredible and really a lot of different ideas of how we can make daily outsized impact. Now, if you ever thought that you don't have much to offer to make an impact in this world, well, today I'll be talking about how every single person can actually make that outsized impact in our local community, not just as Chase Oaks Church, but also as individuals, no matter who you are, where you are, and no matter how much you think you can offer. Now, I believe every single person on this planet, whether you're a Jesus follower or not, we're born with an innate desire to wanna make your life count, wanna feel like you're significant, to wanna bring good to this world. And if that's not you, just pretend the next 30 minutes, okay? So follow along. Now, I grew up in the 70s and 80s as a very confused child. Now, many of you guys who grew up in the 70s, 80s, maybe you could relate. It was a very confusing time. Like, we started out with these things called rotary phones, and the younger generation have no idea how to use this. Why doesn't it work? All the way to button phones, which made things a little bit easier. And then we had these things called 8-tracks, cassettes, and CDs, right? And then, which one do I pick, VHS or Betamax? I don't know. One's smaller, the other one's bigger. What else is different? I don't know. And then for me, do I do a bowl haircut or go for my Asian mullet? And I did both. I did both. I could go on and on in reminiscence of the 80s, which was a pretty fun time for me. But one thing that really stood out for me during that time was that I struggled with my identity. Who am I? This is during the pre-internet, pre-Google, pre-social media days. And we didn't know as much back then as we do now, for better or for worse. And then check this out. By the time I was 9, our family moved 6 times. And I hated always going to a new school, having to make new friends. And I was, because believe it or not, I was a shy, tiny, skeletal little kid. Now, the head I grew into, I was born with this head. This is the original size. Asked my mom. She said, you need to appreciate me the most. You are the hardest to bring into this world. So, boom. Hence, C-section. But anyways, that's a whole other story. That's a whole different thing. But anyways, I thank God they invented that at the time, back in 72. But, so every time I go to a new school, it was the same routine, right? I have to stand up and introduce myself. And I say, my name is Peter. Oh, Peter, tell us your full name. Like, oh, crap. Peter Park. Spider-Man! And then Spider-Man. And I got the whole routine. Oh, my God, that's Spider-Man! All kind of stuff. So, and then being so short, kids would ask me, hey, why are you so short and so young looking? Did you skip a grade? And for sure, I didn't skip a grade that I knew of. But then I started thinking about it. I'm like, wait, did my parents want to kick me out of the house so quickly that they just sent me to school early and so forth? Because, you guys, if you have puppies, there's this thing called zoomies. Puppies just randomly just run. I was that puppy. I can't help it. I just have to run and just go in circles and just go crazy. I mean, they didn't have this thing called ADHD, but I was the poster child of the 70s and 80s with ADHD. Seriously, it wasn't an official thing, but I made it official, I guess. But, and then the first recess. The same thing, because I went to all non-Asian schools growing up. They asked me, are you Chinese? No. Are you Japanese? No. Then what are you? Korean. What's that, right? Because this is way before BTS, K-pop, K-drama, Squid Game, Korean barbecue, way before that. So what's Korean? You know, that kind of thing. Now we all know, right? But what saved me was my athleticism. I was short, small, but I was fast. And I'd always rather be playing outside than rather being inside the house studying. So the result of that, I was the only Asian in regular on level classes because I wasn't smart enough to be an IP, AP, GT, and all that kind of stuff. But I was also the only Asian in sports. All the other Asians were too busy studying. Now, these fellow teammates, we'd be buddy-buddy on the field, but as soon as we get to school, I didn't exist because I didn't match the tall, blonde, jock, good blue eyes, cheerleader, jock kind of crowd. So instead, I hung out with friends who thought C's stood for cool, B's stood for best, and A's stood for abnormal. While other Asians, all the other Asians in the school, the few of them that there were, considered a B plus an Asian F. That wasn't me. So I was confused. Who am I? Was I Korean? Well, I was born in Korea, but I came when I was a baby, and I don't really speak much. So maybe not, I don't know. Was I American? Well, I speak English, and I lived my whole life practically in America, but every once in a while I'm reminded that I don't look American. But then in the summer of eighth grade, I went to a student ministry camp. And it was the first time, I grew up in the church, but it was the first time I realized that Christianity was more than just a religion of do's and don'ts. Christianity was a personal relationship with Jesus. And God, the Heavenly Father, is my Father for eternity, and therefore I'm His child for eternity, forever. Now, initially I thought becoming a child of God, accepting Jesus into my heart, was all about spiritual fire insurance, just about just getting to heaven, right? But then as time passed and I was learning more and more, I realized, oh, there's so much more to being a follower of Jesus than just getting to heaven. It was about making a difference in the world as well. And so this is something that I realized, oh, my identity slowly was growing more and more as a child of God, more than all the circumstantial and external features, but as a child of God, and that slowly compelled me more to try to live out my identity, because when we know who we are, we try to do as we are. So let's look at the Bible passage where Jesus tells his disciple followers early on who they were. And a big part of their identity, and therefore what they do because of that identity. And this passage comes from Matthew 5, which is the most famous sermon that Jesus ever gave, called Sermon on the Mount. It was literally on a mountainside. That's why it was Sermon on the Mount. Nothing too creative or interesting about that title. But the Sermon on the Mount lasted several days. Now, we here at Chase Oaks, we average about 35, 40 minutes, maybe sometimes 45, depending if how Jeff feels that day, right? And some people say, oh, so long. Hey, try 3 days, okay, guys? So anytime you think, oh, we're going so long. No, 3 days Sermon on the Mount. Okay, that's not bad. So we're going to look at Matthew chapter 5. There's no book of Jesus. This is all Jesus. But anyways, Matthew chapter 5. What Bible is he reading? Matthew chapter 5, which has the Sermon on the Mount. And the things that Jesus said, these are things that people have never heard before, completely upside down, paradoxical, just completely just different. And Jesus in this passage reveals a significant part of our identity that has never been heard before as children of God. So let's check out verse 14. You are the light of the world, like a city on the hilltop that cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see so that everyone will praise your heavenly Father. So Jesus is declaring here that his followers is light. Jesus himself, the light of the world, claims himself as the light of the world, according to John 8. And therefore, if we are his children, then we too are light. But what does this mean, light? But we are light. He is light. Well, in the ancient world, light was a powerful symbol of three significant things: life, knowledge, and divine presence. In this passage, Jesus also reminds us how light works. When a city on a hill is lit at night, you could see it for miles away, and it helps travelers have a focal point to guide them in the dark. And when someone lights a lamp, and back then lamp, there was no LEDs or incandescent bulbs, they were candles. It was fire, right? When someone lights a lamp, no one lights it in order only to put it under a bowl, which snuffs it out. They light it to illuminate a room. They light it so that people won't trip over things. But ironically, even with my lights on, I still tend to stub my toe on the corner of our bed. I don't know if any of you guys can relate, but it's just a weird thing that I have. And so, but we know when there's light, where things are, and we're not walking blind most of the time. Now, Jesus declares one significant aspect of our identity, that we too are light. And what does light do? Light shines. Light does good. Light does good. And doing good is actually attractive. Think about the attractive lights out there. Christmas lights. Now I'm seeing more and more Christmas lights. Some of you guys already started like in October, which is crazy, but I'm seeing more and more Christmas lights, and I love seeing Christmas lights and all the creativity that it brings. Fireworks, we're always like enamored by fireworks, right? And then now these days, drones, drone shows and things like that. It's amazing. We're drawn to light like that. And the same way, when we do good, people are drawn to it. People are curious about it. People may even ask us about it. And the hope here is that people will end up seeing Jesus because of it. Now, notice how Jesus doesn't focus on light that talks. He has no mention of the talking, that light talks, but instead that light does. Light does good. And it is attractive and builds curiosity. And that's why here at Chase Oaks, our mission is to inspire people to follow Jesus. We're trying to create more pull than push. Instead of being pushy with our words, we're trying to be more pulley with our actions. Then when people ask, why do you do what you do? Then we have an opportunity to use our words and share our story. Jeff actually talks about this in an eloquent, powerful way several weeks ago in our Ripple Effect. Go back and check that out. Now, many times when we hear about making a difference in the world, we tend to be and think the dramatic, the huge seismic levels. So as a Jesus follower, that might trigger a thought of maybe I need to just lay down everything and just fly and go to some remote jungle in the world where no one has ever touched before and bring Jesus to that place for the rest of my life and die there. Or maybe it's like, I need to give millions of dollars to church plants so that churches can be planted all over the world. Or maybe it's about filling stadiums, AT&T, 80,000 stadium capacity, and then having an altar call where thousands come to know Jesus and get baptized on the spot. All those things actually happened before. They're real things. And if that's something that you feel compelled right now to do, man, go for it. More power to you. I'm not knocking those at all. However, we're going to see that making an outsized impact doesn't necessarily have to take the big to make it big. Let's look at a famous story from 2,000 years ago of Jesus feeding the 5,000. It comes in John 6, and let me read. After this, Jesus crossed over to the far side of the Sea of Galilee, also known as the Sea of Tiberias. A huge crowd kept following him wherever he went because they saw his miraculous signs as he healed the sick. Now, in the beginning of this verse, it says, after this. That was referring to Jesus healing a ton of sick people in the previous cities. And can you imagine you hear these rumors of this guy making the blind see, making the lame walk, making the deaf hear? Shoot! Come on, I want some of that. And then you also hear that he made the Cowboys win another Super Bowl again. Oh, wait. Oh, no, that's my own version. Sorry, Freudian slip. But anyways, miracles can happen. Jesus can do anything. We'll see. Maybe in our lifetime, we'll see. I don't know. But that you hear those rumors, you're going to go. Jesus and his disciples, though, they're exhausted. They're tired. So he went to the other side of the sea to get away from the crowd, and yet here they are flocking and following him for desperate for healing. So let's continue, verse 3. Then Jesus climbed a hill and sat down with his disciples around him. It was nearly time for the Jewish Passover celebration. Jesus soon saw a huge crowd of people come in to look for him. Oh, great. Turning to Philip, he asked, "Where can we buy bread to feed all these people?" He was testing Philip, for he already knew what he was going to do. Philip replied, "Even if we worked for months, we wouldn't have enough money to feed them." So at this time, it was fairly early in Jesus' ministry, and his disciples were still trying to get to know Jesus, what he's capable of and maybe not, and still learning who he is. Jesus testing Philip was not so that Philip would fail, but instead he set up Philip so his faith can actually grow with what is about to happen. But Philip was overly focused on their limited resources. Even though Jesus was right there, and even though Jesus did all these miracles, for some reason, he didn't think that Jesus could provide a food miracle. But don't we do this too often, too? We focus on our limited resources, what's in front of us, instead of asking Jesus to provide more than what we can see or have. We're limited in what we can see or have, and when we turn to Jesus, that actually gives us an opportunity to grow in our faith. So about 15 years ago at my previous church, I've been in ministry for almost 29 years in California. I was executive pastor for a couple years, but I was a student pastor for most of my career. And I was executive pastor for a couple years, and all of a sudden, literally, not even overnight, the day of after Sunday service, bam, I get this long email from our lead pastor. "I'm resigning. I got to take care of some personal problems. Here you go." So just like that, no warning, I'm interim lead pastor. I've led teenagers for a long time, but I don't know how to lead adults. You guys are too mature. You guys are too knowledgeable. You know, like, you're not naive enough where I can get away with things. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of fact checks, right? And I kind of work it out from like, I don't know a thing about how to lead a church. What the heck? I never wanted to be lead pastor, and I'd never experienced it. So I'm like, what is going on? So in that first month, man, it was tough. Because, you know, people were trying to heal from him suddenly resigning for a difficult reason and so forth. And so I realized, my gosh, I need help. I mean, I'm working from morning to midnight and so forth. I need help. And my wife, I mean, she was always been in ministry. She went to seminary and all that kind of stuff, but she was always a volunteer. But I needed more hours. I needed her full time. And in California, trust me, especially as a pastor, you must have your wife working full time, because you must have a dual income and so forth in California, because it's ridiculous there, cost of living. And so I asked her, "Hey, hun, do you mind resigning from your job?" And I did the math, because I had all the money stuff. You know, she loves to spend it, but I am the one that handles it. Anyways, and I said, "You know what? I think we have enough savings for you to not work for about 6 months." And then, "Because, hon, I really need you to help me out. I need you to be like number two person, like associate pastor kind of thing." I said, "Okay." So that 6 months stretches to 9 months. How? See, there's this thing. There's a term called Peter parking it. And that's a term that my staff actually coined for me. It's a verb. "Oh, you Peter parked it." Because the thing is, see, some people call me cheap. Some people call me frugal. No, I'm neither. I'm economically savvy. So here's the difference. Cheap and frugal, you just don't spend money. I spend money, but when I spend that $100, I want to get like $200 worth, $300 worth. For example, I will get prepaid gift cards on a discount, like let's say 25%. And then the good thing about gift cards, it's like cash. So I can combine that with a coupon. Buy one, get one free. So I didn't get the 50% off. I got 75% off, you know, or whatever that math is. So I compound discounts. I stretch my dollar. God knew I was going to be a pastor on a pastor's salary. So he prepared me to stretch the dollar. And so Peter parked it like crazy, right? So that 6 months stretched to 9 months. However, at the nine-month mark, which I thought by then I would get some kind of raise or something would happen with the interim title and maybe I'd be whatever, and then, you know, our salary would change and Cindy can go back to work, whatever. But still, I was interim for 9 months at that point. And looking at our bank account, we had $10. My faith was being tested like never before in my life at that moment. To be continued. All right, let's continue on in verse 8. Leave it hanging. You can't leave. Don't leave yet. If you want to hear the rest of the story. Verse 8. Then Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. There's a young boy here with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what good is that with this huge crowd? See, so Andrew is like Philip, except he does find a boy with some food. But Andrew doesn't ask Jesus to provide. He too doesn't know that or believe that or have the faith to believe that either. Now remember, Philip and Andrew, these are disciples that witnessed all these miracles that Jesus did, but somehow they didn't think that Jesus could fill people's stomachs. Let's move forward. Verse 10, this is Jesus talking. Tell everyone to sit down. So they all sat down on the grassy slopes. Now the men alone numbered 5,000. Then Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks to God, and distributed them to the people. Afterward, he did the same with the fish. And they all ate as much as they wanted, just like Thanksgiving dinner, right? After everyone was full, Jesus told his disciples, now gather the leftovers so that nothing is wasted. So they picked up the pieces and filled 12 baskets, 1 per disciple, with scraps left by the people who had eaten from the 5 barley loaves. Scraps. Oh, I'm so full, forget it. I don't want to take that home. No to-go boxes, no doggy bags. So the disciples took the doggy bags home. Now notice that 5,000 that were counted were only men. But there's a good chance there's probably at least 1 woman for every male. And then, back then, if they're married, they have kids, man, they don't have just 1 child, 2 children. They have multiple child, but conservatively, let's just say they had 2 children each. So then conservatively, we can estimate that there was at least 20,000 people. 20,000. I mean, we should retitle this, Jesus not feeding the 5,000, but Jesus feeding the at least 20,000. Think about 20,000. This room fills about 1750, right? American Airlines Center is 20,000. That's insane. All these people came to be healed and hear Jesus preach. Amazing. Now, Jesus, being the creator of the universe and creating the universe with his voice, could have just merely snapped his finger and produced the best barbecue of Wagyu steaks, Korean barbecue, all you can eat. Obviously, I'm a carnivore, but I mean, he could have done that. But instead, Jesus chose to use his poor little boy and the little scraps that he gave him. 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. Now, what's interesting that John added that detail, barley loaves, because barley was considered grain for the poor. This poor man's food. And then the barley, it's not like this huge loaf, that, like Wonder Bread. No, it's like a little piece of pita bread. And then the 2 fish, we're not talking like 10-pound bass or anything like that. This is a little boy. He's probably just a little lunch sack for snacks. So it's probably 2 little fish like that. And so, which made it very portable for him. And I don't think Jesus taking from this poor little boy versus an adult was random. He took a poor little boy's food, who was, first of all, the only smart one to bring food, apparently. But was also willing to give it all to Jesus. If that boy kept his 5 loaves and 2 fish to himself, it would have fed someone himself. But since he was willing to offer it to Jesus over 20,000 people, including the boy himself, was filled even to the point of feeling full, and they still had leftovers. If the boy was self-focused, self-serving, self-feeding, he would have missed out the opportunity to create that ripple effect and make an outsized impact. Jesus chooses this little poor boy because he wants to let us know that we can all play. Doesn't matter how old, how young, it doesn't matter what your background is. Notice, we don't even know the name of this boy. It was intentional because it wants to say, hey, anyone can play. Anyone can cause this ripple effect and make an outsized impact. All we need to do is be willing to give the little, that we have for the sake of others, and then Jesus will cause the ripple effect and multiply the impact. We get to shine as little light for others to see Jesus. But not only that, not only does he multiply the blessing from what we give, but he multiplies it to the point of leftovers. Part two, $10 in my bank account. Now, Peter parking it, there's also another layer to Peter parking it. I am proud of my credit rating score, my FICO score. It's 800 plus, right? I am proud of that. And I'm sitting here with this house that I had no business in buying in the first place back in 2006. NAGAM loan, anyone? Where you're paying less than the interest because you're hoping that the appreciation outpaces the loan growing over time. And so I had no business affording the house that was way above my head. So I had a NAGAM loan. And then I have two precious young princess daughters, like 3 and 5. And then I have a queen, married to a queen, my wife. And I'm almost 40, so I should be almost like midlife crisis where I'm peaking and, you know, feeling empty at the top, you know, whatever, all that good stuff. And I'm sitting here almost bankrupt. I'm realizing, oh my gosh, I don't have enough money for my house mortgage next month. I'm gonna have to foreclose. That's gonna jack up my credit score. And I'm sitting here, what about, I can't even provide for my family. And so my identity was being challenged as a husband, as a dad. How embarrassing as a pastor that you're declaring bankruptcy. What kind of steward are you with your finances? All these things were going in my head. And then, long story short, I finally hit rock bottom. And when you hit rock bottom, the only place to look is up. And I looked up to Jesus. I said, okay, Jesus, I'm trying to faithfully serve at this church while it's still healing from the wounds. And Cindy had to quit her job, and I still can't have Cindy go back to her job. Like, it's just not possible right now. So Lord, if this is your will, that I foreclose the house, that we sell one of the two cars, that we need to, like, I don't know, eat once a day and fast the other 2 meals, whatever it takes, then so be it. And that was the moment that I was able to give my pride, give my possessions, give my reputation, give all my identity of who I am to Jesus. A week later, an email comes from our board, our elder board. It's like, board members. Oh, Peter, we were looking at the books and we are so sorry. We actually made a decision 9 months ago when you first started to give you a raise. Oh, we forgot to implement it. And so not only are we gonna give you your raise immediately, we're gonna give you your back pay difference from the last 9 months. And of course, allergies kicked in at that moment. And then the thing is, my wife likes to handle the money in one sense of the way it goes, and I manage it over here. And so I know every dollar, and especially at that point, I every penny was accounted for. And sure enough, God just always does it. He makes it so blatant, there's no way you can deny that this is from God. To the T, it was the amount that we need to break even every single month at the lifestyle that we're currently living. And then a few days later, this happens. I always hear the story of other pastors and other missionaries, but never Peter Park. We get this big, giant card in an envelope in the mail. Like, what is this? It was hundreds of church members anonymously writing words of encouragement and thank you, and we're praying for you and all that kind of stuff, randomly, just out of nowhere. It wasn't my birthday, it wasn't a holiday, nothing. And at the bottom of that was a money order that I cannot trace where it came from, a big fat number. And the number is not important, but I was like, what? Why is allergies so strong right now? Leftovers. Not only did God meet our needs, but he gave leftovers because what little I had, I gave to him. Now, the point of this is the principle, not the monetary stuff. There's not a formula. Oh, you give it and God will give you all this money. No. That's not the point here. The point here, that was a principle of I had to give up of who I am. Give my pride. That's harder than giving stuff. Give my identity as all the different roles that I have. And God just said, you know what? I'm going to grow your faith. And here you go. And then, long story short, I end up staying as interim for 4.5 years. Who is official interim for 4.5 years? Anyone? Anyone? That's crazy. But instead of getting bitter to the pastoral search committee, like, why'd you just drag your feet the whole time? You're for 4.5 years, leave me hanging. I realized, because after the 4.5 years was done, Chase Oaks recruited me. So I realized, oh, looking back, I wasn't ready for Chase Oaks. You guys are too good for what I was back then. Right? I wasn't ready for Chase Oaks. God had more to work in my soul, in my heart, and in my faith. And finally, after 4.5 years, he's like, now, Peter, you're finally ready. Come on over to Texas. And so it's been 11 years since. And it's been amazing. It's been amazing. Anyone that ever beats 4.5 years interim title, come up to me. I will buy you dinner. Like, seriously, that just never happens. So you might be asking yourself, what real significant difference can I make when I have so little or practically nothing to offer? Well, let me ask you, what's in your hand? What do your loaves and fish look like? We don't have to wait to have $1 million before we can give a dollar. We don't have to wait to have all the time in the world before we could volunteer for 1 hour. We don't have to wait to invite everyone we know to church before we can invite one. When we take a step of faith, like the little boy, to do good, watch Jesus do greater. Here at Chase Oaks for the next month or so, we actually have over a dozen local opportunities that you can make your light shine through doing good. And all these opportunities is something that anyone and everyone can do. A couple weeks ago, we passed out this card, this blue card. It's called Rock the Season. If you want to grab this card, there's more at the hub. But let me review this card real quick. So to get us started, we really created several opportunities, about a dozen opportunities that's just really easy for anyone, any age, any background, anyone can do to get it started. Because again, it only takes a little pebble to get the ripple going, right? And so there's three major components that we put there. Donate, serve, invite. Donate, serve, invite. The first one, donate. So gifts for good. You heard about it today with Darby and so forth. And we've been talking about it the last couple weeks. The last day drop-off is next Sunday, December 8th. Again, there's also an Amazon wish list. You can go on our website and find. What's so amazing about Gifts for Good, again, is that we have partner Title I schools whose parents have a hard time buying Christmas presents for their kids. And we also have nonprofit organizations, single parents and so forth, that also are in that same predicament. And so what we do is, with your generous donations of toys and coats, they can go to the local goods center the Saturday after December 8th and shop for pennies on the dollar. And then they have the dignity of being able to present presents that the parents provided for them. It wasn't a handout, they actually purchased them. And because of your generosity, man, hundreds of families are being blessed and having an amazing Christmas. Local Good Pantry, we have Local Good Center and Local Good Pantry. They obviously, we get food from different organizations and North Texas Food Bank and HEB and Costco, you name it. But there's these walk-up houseless folks in our community, friends in our community, who need more than just food. They need certain toiletries and socks and certain supplies. And so that's not something that typically gets provided by these food banks. And so we need more of those. So we can not just hand food, but hand other practical daily supplies for them. So you can check that out at localgoodpantry.org for the Amazon list, and they'll be sent right over directly to the Richardson site. Second, serve. Another rock. Bloop. Serve. Local Good Pantry distributes food 3 days a week, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays, and feeds over 15,000 people a month. That's insane. But it would not be possible without volunteers, volunteers, volunteers. There's three staff there, but we need tons of volunteers to make this happen. Now, I got the chance to speak to one of those volunteers, a Chase Oaker named Joanne, who at the time was an empty nester and had extra time on her hands and was looking for something, somewhere to volunteer and find more purpose in her life. So the first month the Local Good Pantry opened, which was last year in November, almost exactly a year ago, she decided to try it out the week of Thanksgiving. After serving, she said it felt so good. And it was so rewarding that she was hooked. The team was so excited, the volunteer team at the time, to do 100, 150 boxes that week. but now is up to 850 per week. That translates back then was 4,000 people per month, now 15,000 people per month. And since then, she's been volunteering a couple times a week and recently was promoted to shift leader as a volunteer. And when I asked her what makes her come back each time, she says that she just loves the people and it just feels really good to have so much food to give to everyone. It just feels good to do good. I love that quote. It just feels good to do good. And I know there are so many more Joannes out there in the audience and watching online. Chase Oaks, you guys are filled with Joannes, and I love that. Now, Local Good Pantry is a year-round opportunity for even kids. 3 days a week, they can serve, and what a great opportunity for kids to get out of their suburbia bubble and actually see that, oh, man, there's people that struggle. Oh, man, like, wow. Like, this is amazing how we're able to give so much food to so many people and learn and what kind of impression that that will make so that they don't take their life for granted. Now, another volunteering opportunity, another serving opportunity is our weekend services and especially our six Christmas services. Y'all, normally we have three a weekend. We got six, all right? And six, whether it's a greeter, coffee prepper, or playing with little ones from birth through 3 years old in Kids Co, man, we need more volunteers, and it is a great opportunity to serve. Just take a test drive, and hopefully that'll hook you. And if it doesn't, it's okay, too, because we got six services coming up. It's going to be awesome. So if you're interested in getting more information on that, stop by the hub, and they will help you out. All right, the final pebble, invite. Look, invite, invite, invite. Six service times, guys. Why do we have so many? Because we don't want to turn people away because there's no more room in the inn, so to speak. Last year was five services. This year we need six. So it's two on Sunday, four on Christmas Eve. But so we want plenty of space, make plenty of space for plenty of people. Invite, invite, invite. And Darby shared earlier that there's invite cards. You can grab that as well. And if you go online, our website, you can get some digital graphics if you want to send that out by Facebook or whatever, Instagram or whatever you use. And so invite, invite, invite. You guys, Christmas service is the lowest hanging fruit of all invitations throughout the year. People are more likely to join a candlelight Christmas service than any other type of Christmas or church service throughout the year. And you can tell them, hey, we're going to sing Christmas carols as well. And that's something that most people are familiar with. So it's a lot less intimidating. So great opportunity there. And of course, the last several years, we've been talking about hosting a pancake party. So man, grab some pancakes and invite the neighbors, invite your friends to host a New Year's Day pancake party. Nothing's going on in New Year's morning except for hangovers. And so it's a great opportunity to invite them and they could get over their hangover through pancakes and whatever else. Finally, we have Local Good Center, Local Good Pantry, and Local Good Coffee. That is set up as one of the reasons so that we can invite the community around us. Because who doesn't like some good coffee, good food, and some pickleball? And the pickleball court is open to every night till 9 o'clock and so forth, first come, first serve, and things like that. But what a great opportunity to invite and even have team meetings or work meetings over there as well. Bottom line is, guys, what's in your hands? What are your loaves and fish? Is it money? Is it time? Maybe it's invitations. Jesus doesn't need much to impact much. That's why he says, you are the light of the world. And let your good deeds shine out for all to see so that everyone will praise your heavenly Father. Who knew that this shy little confused boy like me would one day be so blessed to be part of a church family who continually strives to shine brightly, not only in Plano, but in Collin County, in Dallas County, and all parts of the world. A church family who strives to be light of the world because of the light of the world, Jesus. And therefore inspire people to follow Jesus and together then change our world for good. I'd like to close my talk with a prayer from Paul. It comes from Ephesians chapter 3. It's a prayer that you'll hear Jeff say here and there through Reimagine and many other things that we have. So it's kind of like an anthem prayer here at Chase Oaks, but I thought it'd be super appropriate to end with that. So if you join me in prayer. I pray that from his glorious, unlimited resources, he will empower you with inner strength through his Spirit. Then Christ will make his home in your hearts as you trust him. Your roots will grow down into God's love and keep you strong. And may you have the power to understand, as all God's people should, how wide, how long, how high and how deep his love is. May you experience the love of Christ, though it is too great to fully understand. Then you will be made complete with all the fullness of life and power that comes from God. Now all glory to God, who is able, through his mighty power at work within us, to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think. Glory to him in the church and in Christ Jesus through all generations, forever and ever. Amen.